Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, February 9th, 2017. We'll start with a short story titled "Hoopston Donates Ambulance," written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. City Council members did a little house cleaning Tuesday. Council members voted unanimously to donate the Emergency Medical Services fully loaded city ambulance to the Champaign Police Department. "The city has no use for the ambulance," said Alderman Carl Ankenbrand. It is no longer of use or necessary to the city. The 2006 Ford would be used for Champaign Police Department's bomb squad. In other council business, members named Jeff Weiss and Cody Moore to the Plan Commission. Members also discussed the franchise change from New Wave to Cable One. Council members felt Cable One should give a presentation to the council before a vote should be taken, as previously done by other companies. The council did not want to simply consent to the merge without asking questions. Vote was postponed for a representative of the company to be present. The next Hoopston City Council meeting will be at 7 p.m. on February 21st at City Hall at 301 West Main Street. The next story is titled "District 118 OK's Custodian Pact," written by Carol Roem in Danville. The Danville District 118 School Board ratified a three-year agreement Wednesday with the district's custodians and maintenance workers. Members of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Danville Local 399, the union that represents 52 district custodians and maintenance workers, voted February 6th on the agreement, which will be retroactive to July 1st. Under the new contract, custodians and maintenance workers will receive a pay increase of 50 cents an hour for the first year, with 20 cents an hour pay increases the second and third years of the contract. The district will provide the custodians and maintenance workers with the same health insurance coverage as district employees represented by the Danville Education Association. Employees pay $12 per month for single coverage and $300 a month for dependent coverage, regardless of the number of dependents. Employees also will receive term life insurance. Board member Lon Henderson called the contract negotiations collegial and said, "We put a very good contract in place." Under the terms of the new contract, when a custodian or maintenance worker is required to appear before the school board or a district administrator concerning a matter that could adversely affect the worker's employment, the district will give the employee a minimum of 24 hours notice and the reasons for the meeting. The worker also is entitled to have a union representative present to advise him or her during the meeting. The overtime rate will be paid at time and a half of the hourly rate for all overtime hours in excess of 40 hours worked per week. Overtime that is pre-approved for holidays and Sundays will be paid at twice the hourly rate. If the employee's regular shift falls on Saturday or Sunday, the two-time rate applies only to the seventh day of the employee's work week. Scheduled overtime will be rotated equally among employees of that worksite by job classification, beginning with the most senior employee. If no one from the worksite is available, overtime may be extended to all employees within the district. If a head custodian is absent for more than 15 days, on the 16th day, the employee who is filling in will receive either the head custodian pay rate or keep his current rate, whichever is greater. All job vacancies will be posted for a minimum of 5 working days. A permanent employee will be selected to fill the job within 15 working days of the job posting, with the approval of the Director of Buildings and Grounds and the Human Resources Director. New hires will be placed on 90 working days probation prior to being hired by the board and subject to an evaluation by the Director of Buildings and Grounds. If school is closed due to inclement weather, all custodial, warehouse, and maintenance employees will report to their respective worksite. Work shifts may be adjusted. Also on Wednesday, the board approved regulating travel, meal, and lodging expense reimbursements, so the district will have a set maximum dollar amount for both district employees and school board members in accordance with the Local Government Travel Expense Control Act. Mileage will be reimbursed at 53.5 cents a mile and a lodging reimbursement of up to $175 a day for downstate Illinois and Indiana and up to $300 a day for Chicago, Chicago suburbs, and out-of-state except Indiana. They decided not to take action to extend a lease agreement for a cell phone tower owned by Crown Castle, but is located on the property the district acquired when it purchased the former Risser property at 617 North Jackson Street in May of 2014. The district has a lease agreement until March of 2024 with Crown Castle that provides about $8,000 a year in revenue to the district. They pay us money to lease the property the tower sits on, Business Director Heather Smith said. The board last year turned down a request by Crown Castle to extend the lease agreement. The district might have long-term needs for the parcel that a proposed 20-year extension would hinder or prevent. Okay, the next story is titled City Taking Applications for Probationary Police Firefighter Testing, written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. To try to reach as many people as possible and allow study sessions, city officials have started the application process earlier for probationary police and firefighters and extended it as far as they can in testing time. Testing occurs every 2 years when the city's eligibility list expires. The city is taking applications for the probationary police officer and probationary firefighter testing process with tests later this year that lead to a final eligibility list. Danville Human Resources Administrator Bill Westfall said the application packets are now on the city's website at www.cityofdanville.org and can be picked up at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Buildings Lobby at 17 West Main Street. The applications must be submitted by the city's Human Resources Office to the City Human Resources Office by 4:30 p.m. on Friday, June 30, 2017. The eligibility list for each will become effective December 6, 2017. The testing process consists of a physical agility test, a written test, and an oral interview. The successful candidate must pass each element in order to proceed to the next step. The physical agility test will take place in August, written testing in September, and oral interviews in October. Study sessions for those who submit applications will take place during July. Applicants must meet the following minimum requirements: be at least 20 and not yet 35 at the time of application, and must be 21 and 35 years when appointed. High school diploma, GED required, be physically fit and have good vision, be a citizen of the United States, pass background check. Police officers must have at least 30 credit hours of coursework from an accredited college by the time of the appointment. The city offers an excellent salary and benefits package. Also, the probationary period for police officers is 18 months and for firefighters, 12 months. In past years, city officials have focused on recruiting more minority candidates to have the departments be more representative of the city's demographics. 2 years ago, Westfall reported the city received 62 police and 42 firefighter applications. The percentage of minority applications in both cases was close to 17%, he said. Of those applicants 2 years ago, 30 probationary firefighter applicants and 38 probationary police officer applicants passed their written exams. Westfall said there remain about 10 names on the police eligibility list and 29 on the fire eligibility list. Okay, the next story is titled Westville Library to Host Bad Art Day, written by Brendan Dennison in Westville. An art contest in Westville might get a little ugly on Saturday, but it's all just in good fun. The Westville Public Library will host its first Bad Day Art at 10 a.m. Saturday, where teens and adults are invited to create their own artwork, even if they believe they are artistically challenged. Supplies will be provided and the artwork will be displayed at the library for the remainder of February. Library Program Director Barb Dudich said the event is open to both new and seasoned artists who would like to try something new or create something for fun without fear of being judged on their technique. At the end, Patrons will vote on entries in the following three categories: the good, the bad, and the ugly. Those interested in attending can register by calling the library at 267-3170 or stopping by in person at 233 South State Street in Westville. Patrons will be provided 9-inch by 12-inch paper and will have their choice of medium: watercolor, pencils, paint, or crayons. Attendees may have up to 2 hours to create their artwork, depending on how fast the group as a whole works, and can create as many pieces as they wish in the time allowed. Dudich said the content can be anything but must be appropriate for a library setting. Dudich also said attendees might realize their work is better than they think it is. Although she considers herself to be artistically challenged, she said she took her art into WCIA 3's CI Living program, and they all thought it was pretty good. I'm not an artist, but it's all in the eye of the beholder, she added. Dudich said she got the idea online, and the libraries and organizations have held the event with good turnout and success. She also said their library offers a lot of things besides books. We try to be community-friendly, and any art can be fun, Dudich said. It's a fun thing for those who are gifted and those who aren't. They can have fun with art whether they think they're talented in art or not. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Michael C. Upperman Sr., 76 of Danville, passed away peacefully from this life on February 2, 2017 at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. Per his wishes, he will be cremated and there will be no services. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Jean Walsh, 91 of Covington, Indiana, left us suddenly on Monday, February 6, 2017. Services will be at 11:30 a.m. on Thursday, February 9th at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville, with Zachary Rainey officiating. Visitation will be on Thursday from 10 to 11:30. Burial will follow services at Oak Hill Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Jean's name to Friendship Circle Center, 1307 Pearl Street, Covington, Indiana, 47932. Sylvia Buford, 61 of Danville, passed this life at 4:44 p.m. Sunday, February 5th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life will commence at 12 noon on Saturday, February 11th, at New Life Christian Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating Pastor Thomas W. Miller, Intermit Spring Hill Cemetery. A public viewing will commence from 1 to 5 p.m. on Friday, February 10th at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street in Danville. Carmen Elaine Miller, 71, passed away February 3rd at her residence in Brazil, Indiana. A celebration of Carmen's life will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday at Westside Nazarene, 304 Vance Lane in Danville, with William Wright officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Hedwig Pedrizzoli, 83 of Danville, went home to be with the Lord on Tuesday, February 7, 2017, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be on Friday, February 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. A massive Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, February 11th at Holy Family Catholic Church, 444 East Main Street in Danville, with Father Loftus officiating, with a private burial to follow. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Heidi's name to Holy Family Catholic Church or the Alzheimer's Association. Gary D. Howard, 69, of Vetersburg, Indiana, departed this earth on Saturday, February 4th, with his family by his side. A memorial visitation is scheduled for Saturday, February 11th, at the Church of God in Vetersburg from 11 to 2 p.m., with a memorial service at 2 p.m. Monetary donations would be appreciated in lieu of flowers and can be directed to the Sunset Covington Chapel, 420 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana, 47932. Stephen C. Brown, 35 of Danville, passed away at 12:02 p.m. on Sunday, February 5th, in Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 11th at Robeson Chapel in Catlin with Pastor David Wickens officiating. Burial will be in Oak Ridge Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, February 10th at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Memorials may be made to the charity of the donor's choice. Carrie Lynn Golick Miller of Danville passed away peacefully at Carl Foundation Hospital in Champaign at 4:45 a.m. on Wednesday, February 8th. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to the charity of the donor's choice. The family has entrusted Sunset Funeral Home, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, to assist in honoring Carrie's life. Michael L. Jennings, 64, of Eddyville and formerly of Rossville, passed away at 9:17 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis from complications of a six-month battle with leukemia. There will be no services. Visit ALYFH.com to leave an online condolences. Memorials in his name may be sent to the Project Hope Humane Society, P.O. Box 125, Metropolis, Illinois, 62960. Michael Mike Packard, 56, of Bismarck, died at 9:21 p.m. Tuesday, February 7th in Danville. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Drew Menser will officiate. Burial services will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. And Aletha May Peewee Ritter, 69, of Westville, passed away at 3:45 p.m. on Tuesday, February 7th, at home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 11th, at the Rock Church with Pastor Randy Downing officiating. Burial will follow at Spring Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday at the Rock Church. Memorials may be made to the Rock Church. Rortford Funeral Services in Tilton is assisting the family. Okay, the next story is titled Violet Takes Audience on Musical Journey, written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville. And there's a picture of Phil Bryant as Flick, Mallory Middendorf as Violet, and Brian Jenkins as Monty rehearse a scene from the DLO production of Violet. Director Gene Dunn describes Violet as the best little musical most of you have never heard of. DLO Musical Theater will present the award-winning and Tony-nominated Broadway musical on Friday through Sunday, February 17th through 19th, in Bremer Auditorium at Danville Area Community College. The performance on February 17th will start at 7 p.m., featuring desserts only. Full dinner performances will be at 6:30 p.m. on February 18th and at 12:30 p.m. on February 19th. The dinner served by the DACC Culinary Art class will consist of beef brisket or tilapia, sides, salad, and dessert. As for the show, if you're not a fan of musicals, you'll be pleasantly surprised with Violet. This is not a typical musical, Dunn said. For example, the music is unique and is unique in that there is a range of styles, including country, bluegrass, soul, gospel, rhythm and blues, rock, and amazing ballads, she said. The story revolves around Violet, a disfigured woman of unshakable faith who boards a Greyhound bus in Spruce Pines, South Carolina, to pursue her dream of beauty. The real journey takes place through the people she meets on the road, leading to a television preacher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Set in 1964, themes of tragedy, racism, faith, and ultimately acceptance and love are all part of the story. The 14-member cast includes Mallory Williams Middendorf in the title role and Phil Bryant and Brian Jenkins as two young soldiers to whom Violet grows close. Dunn said all three are stellar, experienced performers who have strong followings in and beyond the community. In fact, she said the entire cast is phenomenal. Jenkins, a student at GACC, said jokingly of his role, "I went from custom-made high heels for Rocky Horror Picture Show to the 1960s Army boots." Jenkins, as a heartthrob soldier, said he had to push different boundaries for Violet, but he enjoys it. His character, he said, is kind of clueless. He loves the girl but doesn't realize it for a while. He has an awesome show-stopping solo, "Last Time I Came to Memphis," which he described as risque and a lot of fun to sing. It's literally not your typical musical. It's not a Broadway-style show, Jenkins said. With nonstop music, he said, it's going to be amazing. Dunn described the show as a drama with bits of comedy. She embraced a minimalist vision for the production, simple costumes and a bare-bones set, so she could put the focus on the story, the characters, and the cast. Overall, she said of the play, it's very powerful and very uplifting. Directing Violet has been Dunn's dream for 7 years. She fell in love with it after listening to the score. This is her second time partnering with music director Karen Grove. Other cast members are Ellis Mansfield as young Violet, Paul Strain as her father, Melanie Clark as an old woman hotel hooker, Mark Leonard as the preacher, Ashley Bourne as Lulu Almeida, Natalia Bourne as lounge singer, bus passenger, gospel choir, Craig Smith as radio singer, bus driver, and bus passenger, Brad Pollard as Virgil, radio singer and bus driver, and Theodore Klein as Billy Dean, bus driver and radio singer. Gospel choir pit chorus features Kelly Carlton, Isabel Peters, Brittany McDaniels, Lauren Smith, and Haley Juhas. This is Dunn's third time as director for DLO, having done the Spitfire Grill and La Cage aux Folies. DLO Musical Theater, formerly Danville Light Opera, a nonprofit community theater, has been presenting Broadway-style adult and youth musicals in Vermilion County since 1956. FYI, tickets for Violet may be purchased at www.dlomusicaltheater.com or by calling the box office at 431-1660 by February 16th. None will be sold at the door. Seating is limited, so early purchase is encouraged. DLO Musical Theater dessert dinner theater shows often sell out. Tickets are $25 for dessert only, $15 for students, and $37 for the full meal, or $27 for students. Okay, now a short editorial titled "Let's See Abe Standing Around." The Vermilion County Museum will celebrate Abraham Lincoln's 208th birthday with an open house Sunday afternoon, a fun way to honor the nation's 16th president who once practiced law in Danville when he rode the court circuit. Lincoln was a frequent visitor to Vermilion County, and the museum complex at 116 North Gilbert Street includes the former home of Dr. William Fithian, one of Lincoln's friends. Lincoln actually gave a speech once from the balcony on the south side of the house. Lincoln is a familiar figure across Illinois, especially in those locations where he once lived and worked, and his image will become even more common as Illinois prepares to celebrate it bicentennial in 2018. With that in mind, it would be great to figure out a way to add a Lincoln statue to the county museum complex or some other prominent site. Springfield, of course, has a couple of Lincoln statues. Other Illinois cities with the president's likeness include Chicago, Bloomington, Hillsboro, and Dixon, among others. The statue in front of the Danville Public Library adds a great element to the building, as do the Minutemen statue and the former federal courthouse and the Victory statue in the small park at Main and Gilbert Streets. In addition, the addition of a Lincoln statue would enhance the city's attractions and help attract visitors, even more so as the state's bicentennial draws closer. Area civic organizations or service clubs might tackle the fundraising necessary for the project. Even a large bust of Lincoln on the museum's grounds would serve to honor the man many consider to be the nation's greatest president, and it would continue to represent the link he had with Vermilion County for decades to come. Okay, next we'll do a story titled "Just One Question." For the last few weeks, they have been practicing their lines, creating sets, gathering props, even preparing a menu for the February 27th dinner theater production of Now Let Me Fly. Through their preparation, students in Project Success of Vermilion County's after-school program at Danville's Northridge Middle School have gained a better understanding of the landmark Supreme Court case Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, which declared separate but equal unconstitutional and paved the way for integration at schools and some of the people behind the case. The students were kind of hesitant at first, said site coordinator Mary Catherine Roberson, adding that Marcia Cebulski play, in which NAACP lawyer Thurgood Marshall's mentor takes him on a journey looking in on the everyday folks involved in the fight against segregation, doesn't shy away from the ugliness of racism. Once they began to understand what it was about and how it pertained to them today, they were more interested and excited. Noelle McGee stopped by the after-school program to ask, "What do you admire about the character that you're portraying?" Jacob Taylor said, "I play Marshall, who became the first African-American on the Supreme Court. In this play, he's the lawyer that won the case. His mentor takes him to the past, and he gets to see what students went through. Black schools had one room and not enough books for everyone. They didn't get the science equipment white kids got. I admire my character because he fought for what was right and didn't give up. It shows you can do anything you put your mind to." And Dakaria Heron, "My character is Barbara Johns, a 16-year-old black girl. She doesn't like the way her school is compared to the white schools, and she addresses the school board. She says a page of the Constitution is missing from her social studies book. She wants a chance at Romeo and Juliet, but she's told she's not fit to read. She goes to school in a tar paper shack. When her bus gets to school, the bus driver gets out because he's also the history teacher. I like that she stands up for her rights and isn't afraid. When they tell her they will close her school, she tells them public education is a right. You stop me from being educated, you stop me from being an informed citizen." And Dylan Garcia says, "I play Eleanor's father and a white man with a gas can, among others. I don't admire them. They're mean and they're racist. Eleanor is a white girl who goes into a black barbershop because she likes blues music. Her father, when he finds her there, he tells her to go to the car. He tells them white people built this country and we're going to take it back if we have to do it block by block. It's offensive. You won't judge people by their color. We're all equal." And Antez Backstrom says, "I play Charles Houston, Marshall's law school professor and mentor. He comes back as a ghost. He tries to get him to stop flapping his wings, acting like he knows it all. He wants him to focus on the case and the people and the consequences. I admire him because he stays with Marshall and never gives up. He inspires him to be the first black judge on the Supreme Court." And Deontay Hawthorne says, "I'm in charge of the sets and drawing every background scene. A burned-down church, the office of the Legal Defense Fund of the NAACP, a school and a school auditorium. It will take the audience to some of the places people fought segregation. I admire Marshall and all of the people who wanted equality. Every kid deserves to have the same education as another." Sounds like a good little play. Just got about a minute left, so just a couple scores, sports scores. Danville Area Community College men's basketball team were disappointing with an 85-57 loss to Parkland on Wednesday. And DACC women's lost to, but 77-49. But they had a couple of good quarters, according to the little article here. So anyway, that'll be it for today on Thursday, February 9th, 2017. It's pretty cold out there, so if you don't have to go out, I wouldn't go. And it's kind of slick because of all the little snow that we did get was just enough to make a little havoc out there. So if you have to go out, just be careful and dress warm. I've got 4 layers on today. Can't even get my coat zipped, if that tells you anything. So anyway, I hope you all have a good week, and I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.